Hi, everybody. I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic. You know, the scary thing about that is it makes sense to me. Whoa. I had Nancy had asked me to kind of stretch the steps out to May 4th, and I didn't realize that I had a prior commitment. My father, my 82-year-old father, is coming in from out of town. He's really originally from Florida, and when I came out of the Army, he moved back to Michigan. That was before I quit drinking, so now he's coming back down to visit me again, so I will not be here next week, but Daryl has agreed to do step 12, and I tell you, if there's anybody that has really worked that step, it's Daryl, and he's the same fellow that did step 2 for y'all, so I know that y'all make him feel as welcome as you've made me feel, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. This is a neat bunch of people, I tell you. I felt right at home in this group. What we're going to talk about tonight is step 11, and I'm going to do a little bit of reading, but really what I want to do, I used to have kind of all kinds of preconceived notions about what they were talking about in step 11 when they talked, especially if they talked about meditation. I heard it read once, you know, we saw through prayer and medication, you know, that makes sense to me too. But I had all kinds of preconceived notions about meditation, what that was and what it meant and how you do it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And having been a mini monk at one time, I had ideas about it from that. And I just had to kind of relearn some things from experience. And what I'll try and do is share with you some of the experiences that I've had in working all the different steps, but in step 11 tonight. It says, sought through a prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Okay. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I thought that was pretty tough, you know, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Because I don't know how you all used to pray, but I used to have a Santa Claus God, you know, kind of crawl up on his lap and I want this and I want that and so forth and so on. There's another place in the Big Book that talks about in the promises, one of the sets of promises, there are several sets of promises in the Big Book. It says, we will have a new employer. And I kind of look at it this way, you know, if I was going to go, anybody work construction? Do you have a team of people that work for you? No? Anybody, what kind of work do you do? Bricklayer? Okay. Let's say if your boss was hiring people, right? And he wanted a mason tender. I used to do that, all right, so I know what that is. And I really needed a job, okay? And I'd go to him and I'd say, what's your boss's first name? Huh? Mitch. Mitch, okay. I said, hey, Mitch, you know, I really, really need a job and I'd like to apply for a job as a mason tender. What do I got to do to get this job? And he'd say, well, what you got to do is you got to get up here about 7:30 in the morning, you know, and we're going to work all day. I want you to mix mortar. I want you to carry bricks. I want you to put them on a pulley and carry them up. I want you to do all this and all these different things that he describes. And he says, we'll take a lunch break. You get a 15-minute break in the morning. Then we'll take a lunch break around 1 o'clock, noon. And then we'll have a half-hour lunch break. Then you get a 15-minute break about 3 o'clock. And at about 5 o'clock, you know, you might get ready to go home. And he says, and sometimes we got a job that we have to finish, and I might ask you to stay and work later as long as it's daylight, and I might ask you to come in on Saturdays and, you know, help us finish the job if it's in a hurry. Okay, now I really want this job, right? And I really need the money, right? And I said, well, Mitch, 7:30 in the, you're talking about a.m.? You know, I thought 7:30 only came once a day and it was in the p.m. You know, I'm not really a morning person. And, you know, you got to fight traffic that out. How about if I come in about 10, okay? And what I'd like to do, you know, is 15-minute breaks. Yeah, that's okay, but a half an hour for lunch, I mean, I need time to digest, you know, before going right back to work. And really what I need is about an hour to an hour and a half for lunch. 15-minute, you know, break for, you know, in the afternoon is fine. But instead of the 15-minute break at 3 o'clock, how about if we just knock off and beat the traffic home, you know? And I'm not into this evening and overtime and weekends and all that kind of stuff. And mixing mortar, isn't that manual labor or something like that, you know? And heavy concrete bricks, I'll tell you what, I help you plan, you know? And how much you say you pay? About $5.50 an hour? No, what I require is more like 10. What do you think this guy is going to do? Yeah, he's going to wave at me without all his fingers and wish me a lot of luck in a new job, whatever it is, you know, and kind of say goodbye, you know, go on down the road, right? So when I go to my other employer, my higher power that way, and I make demands on him, what do you think is going to happen? Okay, and that's just the way I kind of look at it. But if I go to this guy, Mitch, and I say, yeah, 7:30 in the morning, no problem. Okay, I'll be there early if you need me. And I'll be willing to work real hard. You know, I don't mind, you know, mixing mortar and carrying blocks and putting them on the pulley and raising them up and putting up scaffolding and taking it down, all that kind of stuff. I don't have a problem with that. You need me to work overtime, I'm available. I need the money. I'll work Saturdays. I'll work evenings as long as it's daylight. You just tell me what you need to do, and I can, you know, 5:50 an hour start was fine. And I went and I did what that guy's will was. And I did it well. And I did it consistently, day in and day out. Eventually, what do you think might happen? I might get a promotion. I might start making a little bit more money, maybe get a raise. Okay? I might end up getting all the things that I wanted to start off with that I wouldn't have gotten if I just demanded them right off the bat. You understand what I mean? Okay? So I kind of had this concept of a Santa Claus type guy, you know. I'd kind of crawl up on his lap and let me tell you what I want for Christmas. And, you know, us alcoholics, we never want too much, right? You know? You really, there's only one thing I ever wanted. I wanted to meet the nymphomaniac blonde millionaires that owned a chain of liquor stores, you know. Very simple needs, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, God never did that for me. He's also never burdened me with unmanageable wealth by winning the lottery. You know, I do buy a ticket when it gets to $40 million because, you know, I could pay off Sears as long as it would last. But I think he just kind of sits up there and laughs and says, no, Jerry, you know, if we gave you this, you get sick again, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, what I do is I try to turn my will and my life over to my higher power in a third step, and step 11 is kind of a continuation of that in the action steps. I pray only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. Now it starts talking about prayer, and we say, well, how do you pray? Well, there's some real prayers. First of all, let me tell you, I was Catholic, right? And you ever hear a Catholic say the rosary? I mean, it's like that guy in the advertisement for Federal Express that used to talk real fast and get done, okay? When I came in here and held hands with you first time, first of all, there was a guy holding hands with me. What's going on here, you know? But you all said the Lord's Prayer slowly. I don't think I'd ever said the Lord's Prayer slowly before. And I kind of got in the habit of saying the Lord's Prayer slowly. And after a while, I began to think about what it meant. And when you say it slowly and you think about what it means, that's kind of what praying is, okay? But also praying is just talking to God. And I tell you, you all know I'm a little bit weird sometimes, so you can imagine how I talk to God sometimes, okay? There was a time in my life where nothing was going right. The company I worked for went out of business. The way they let me know that is they bounced a couple of checks on me. The rent check bounced. The landlord was talking about, you know, giving us notice and us having to find another place. They repossessed the car. They turned off the power. I mean, every check I had written for 2 weeks to pay the bills bounced because the checks were no good that I got for paychecks. And, I mean, it was just an absolute disaster. Everything was going wrong. I ended up, the only thing I could find was throwing newspapers. And since they repossessed my car, I was driving taxi cabs. And I was throwing newspapers out of the taxi cab in the middle of the night, you know. And I had, at one point in my life, I had been in South America, and I brought back some, they're called arrows, but they're made out of these long strips of bamboo-type reed and tahibo wood, which is very hard wood, and feathers on the other end. They look like spears. And when I was so frustrated with everything, I had to just vent some of my frustration, so I went out and I talked to God. You know, I talked at Him. I was out in the backyard in the middle of the night, and I had these spears, and I was chucking them at this tree, you know, saying, give me a break, and throwing these spears at this tree just to get rid of some of the anger and some of the frustration, all this stuff was going on, you know. And I was mad at God because this is not fair and all this kind of stuff. And my neighbors were peeking through the Venetian blinds again, you know. There he goes again. The dog was hiding behind the couch again. All kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah, I know. For some reason, my neighbors never lived there very long. They were all rental houses on both sides of us, and we never had neighbors more than 6 months at a time. I don't understand that. But I came back in the house after I got rid of all the, because it just had built up and built up. I got rid of all the frustration and everything, and I felt better. And I came back in the house and said, that felt pretty good. She says, yeah, but the neighbors think you're nuts. She says, Jerry, you know, it's funny, you don't get struck with lightning sometimes the way you talk to God, you know, because I was out there and I was telling him I was angry and I was frustrated and I need a break and kind of help me out here and all this kind of stuff. But I look back on it, and I thought very seriously about what you said, and I look back on it. Have you ever had a good friend once in a while that you get angry at, angry with, or angry, or venture anger to? And they're a good enough friend that you can do that, okay? And then they listen to you, and you're still friends afterwards? Well, that's a pretty good friend, okay? And so what I was doing, yes, I was frustrated, and yes, I was angry, and yes, all this stuff was going through my mind. I didn't know what I was going to do. And we were, I had to go to a friend of mine in AA. Just, we were cooking on sterno cans just to get money to buy some groceries for a week or two because we had nothing to eat. And, you know, it was okay. I look back on it, and it was okay. God didn't strike me with lightning or anything else. In fact, he answered my prayer in a rather unusual way, which I'll share with you later. But it was all right, and it was okay to get angry and tell God I'm angry. All right, I'm frustrated. I need a break. You know, give me some help here. I don't know if you agree with that or disagree with it. I'm just relating what my experience is. And the way I look at it is, he knows me well enough, and he's a close enough friend. And he cares enough about me that I can go ahead and sometimes vent some of my feelings to him, and he still loves me anyway. Ever had that happen with the kids? You know, God always answers my prayers. All right? And I've got some kids, and I'm interested in their welfare. I'm going to draw on other analogies. I think in analogies for some reason. I'm very concrete. I have a lot of trouble with this theoretical stuff. But I love my kids, all right? And I got this 13-year-old that I'm going to go camping with this weekend. Yeah. He's the last of the scouts, so I get to go camping with him. He's asked me to go camping with him. I tell you, that they didn't want to spend a night in the woods with me before, you know. Their reputation with a flare gun, yeah, don't let him start the fire, you know. So, yeah. But it's kind of neat. I'm looking forward to it. And he asked me to go. That's amazing, you know. He asked me to go. But anyway, this 13-year-old that I have, I love him dearly, but he is absolutely, absolutely convinced that candy is good for him and cake and ice cream is good for him, and it's exactly what he needs, and if we just listen and give him what he wants, everything will work out fine, you know. And if I let him have his way, he would do nothing but eat candy and cake and ice cream 3 meals a day. I mean, he just loves sweets. We got to kind of watch him on it, you know. And I'm kind of like that with HP when I start making demands. I think I know what's good for me because I like it, right? And I'm always demanding what I used to always be demanding, what I think I know what's good for me. But it's probably not really good for me. And in some ways, I'm a little older and wiser than my 13-year-old son. My wife will debate that. I have 5 kids, all right? She says she has 6, and I'm the oldest. Now that tells you anything. We were going to have 2, and then we had the 3rd, and I kept going back to apologize. That's why we got 5 kids. Actually, we had all 5 kids when I was still drinking, and we haven't had any since I quit. Now I guess I know I did my blackout, so I don't know. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine what that's like, Robert? Every 9 months and 20 minutes, you come out of a blackout, and you're, well, who was that? That's terrible. Anyway, where was I? You know, some people lose their train of thought. Mine gets totally derailed. They just go off on this tangent. Anyway, I'm a little older and wiser than this 13-year-old sometimes, and I know what he really wants, and I know what he's really convinced is good for him, and I know we're really convinced that, you know, that this is something that wouldn't hurt him at all. And so being a little older and wiser, I say, no, son, we're not going to eat, you know, we're going to eat your meat, and you're going to eat your meat and potatoes and vegetables, drink your milk, and then we'll talk about dessert. And why do I do that? Okay? Because I care about him. I mean, I could probably be the most popular dad in the world if I just gave him cake and ice cream and candy all the time. But it's more important to me, his welfare, than me being, you know, the greatest dad in the world as far as he's concerned, but by giving him whatever he demands, even when it's not good for him. And I kind of look at HP that way. You know, sometimes, a lot of the time, I have no idea what's good for me. Okay. My life when I was drinking is guaranteed proof of that, and since I've been sober the last 13 years, most of the time that's pretty good proof of it too, because I have absolutely no idea what's good for me sometimes. So I have to ask God, you know, what's good for me. And if my son had come up to me and says, well, what do you think I ought to eat? Then, you know, that would have been totally different. Can you imagine that, a 13-year-old coming up and saying, well, what do you think I ought to eat? And then following your instructions, it'd be wonderful. And I got a, you know, I have a 15-year-old, and he's absolutely convinced that he could get a, you know, he's ready to get his learner's permit and that he could get a motorcycle. You know, sometimes God says no, all right, because what I ask for isn't good for me. Sometimes he says, not yet, okay? And I have to tell my son, well, we're not going to quite move on that just yet, okay? We're going to kind of wait and slow down, and, you know, maybe I'll start you off in the moped in the backyard or whatever, but, you know, we're going to take it easy, and I'm not going to give him what he wants right off the bat because it's probably not going to be good for him. He could hurt himself, okay? The youngest one could get sick. So sometimes God says, not yet. And there are other times when my kids that ask for something that's good for them, and I say, yeah. And again, it's kind of like HP with me. I think he answers me. And the way he answers me is yes, no, and not yet. Okay? And I think what he does is I have a concern for my children's welfare, and I love Dr. Scott Peck's definition of love. You ever hear his definition of love in the book, The Road Less Traveled? It says, genuine concern for the welfare of another, even at my own inconvenience. Wow, what a definition of love, even at my own inconvenience. So I might not be popular with a 13-year-old by saying, okay, we're going to eat meat and potatoes and vegetables first, but what overrides being popular? Genuine concern for his welfare. I might not be popular with a 15-year-old by saying, no, you're not quite ready for a motorcycle yet, but what overrides being popular? Genuine concern for his welfare. And I think HP has demonstrated to me repeatedly, and I'll talk about that a little bit tonight, over and over and over again, that he does have genuine concern for my welfare. So if I ask for his will for me, and I've tried to turn that 11th step into a prayer. Let me know what your will for me is. And since it might not be what I want, give me the power to carry it out. Okay? Because a lot of times I'm going to need some help. I'll give you another experience about talking to God. I had that job that I was, that kind of disappeared under my feet. I ended up throwing newspapers and driving taxi cabs for about 6 months. And it was an everyday thing. I was like, you ever see this ad of this guy making the donuts? He comes in the door, I got to make the donuts. And one day he meets himself coming in as he's going out. You know, I got to make the donuts. And he meets himself coming in the door, I already made the donuts. You know, that's kind of the way I felt. I was waking up and it was dark, and I couldn't figure out whether it was dark and I was supposed to go drive the taxi cab, or it was dark in the morning and I was supposed to get up and, you know, throw the newspapers. And one day I was out there, and I had been talking to my sponsor about this, and he says, you do what's in front of you, you pray and you ask for the results. And I was out there, and it was the winter time, and I was just, I mean, it was cold, and I was running through an apartment complex. And they had this complex set up so that you couldn't drive through and throw the newspaper. You had to put bags of newspapers on your shoulder and run through the backyards, because that's where the porches were, and throw the newspapers into the backyards. In the middle of the night, pitch black. And it was a Sunday. And you know how big Sunday newspapers were? I mean, two big, hefty bags of newspapers. And I'm starting off this thing, and I'm saying, God, is this what you want me to do with my life? You know, I mean, drive taxi cabs and throw newspapers? That was about the time back in the 80s when taxi cab drivers were getting shot, you know, a lot, because that's when crack cocaine was getting real popular, and they were killing taxi cab drivers. And I says, hey, if this isn't what you want me to do, I says, let me know. And I'm kind of dense, so give me a strong message. Okay, I'll never say that again. I took six steps, stepped in a hole in the dark, and fractured my ankle in two places. And, I, you know, of course, the next thing out of my mouth is, this is not what I had in mind. I mean, all, you know, I had to crawl back to the taxi cab, then I had to call the cab company, right? And they didn't know I was throwing newspapers out of their taxi cab on the one night. Calling me, can you get somebody to come out here and drive this thing back to my house so my kids can empty out the newspaper? I mean, it was just a disaster. So, of course, I lost the job with the taxi cab company, all right, because they didn't know I was throwing newspapers out of the taxi cab. I was renting the cab, so I wasn't dishonest. I was renting the cab. And the and then I couldn't throw the newspapers because I couldn't get up and run. So I was all of a sudden out of both jobs. And as bad as things were before, things got worse. And I could not find work anywhere. And finally, a friend of mine in the program said, you know, I think they're looking for somebody to work at this old Gateway place down on the old Sands Motel on Phillips Highway where it used to be, where the Avenues Mall is now. He says, to kind of handle the night thing. He says, I think it's just part-time, but, you know, you might want to try that. And I couldn't walk, and I had to keep my foot elevated, all right, because it was all in cast and all that kind of stuff. And he says, if you keep it down too long, it's going to swell up. So I got this job. I went and applied, and they say, well, yeah, you can sit at the desk at night, answer the phone, answer the front door, keep your foot up until you get your foot out of the cast, and then we'll see what you can do. So that's how I start off into their field of counseling. I sat at the desk with my foot up. All right? And guess what some of the recovering drunks couldn't do in the middle of the night? You know, people don't time their crises from 8 to 5. Did you know that? Yeah. Sometimes in the middle of the night, they couldn't sleep. And they want to get up and talk to somebody. Well, who's awake? The guy over there with his foot up on the cast on a desk. And I had talking to these drunks all night long. I mean, it was great for me. It helped me keep awake. And after a few months of that, I got the foot out of the cast and everything else. They said, well, why don't you go back to school? They suggested to me, you know, you seem to be able to talk to these guys, and they seem to be able to relate to you. Why don't you go back to school and think about becoming a counselor? And that's why I ended up going back to school. And it took me 4 years to get a master's degree and then working in the counseling field for years and years and years. And I don't know that all that accidental thing wasn't what he had in mind. Okay, it seemed to be at the time. And I would have probably never picked that. I probably would have never picked it because I was always going for the big bucks, you know, the sales jobs and the out of town and the travel and the adventure and all that kind of crazy stuff. And I had to learn, you know, some new ways of thinking and some new ways of doing. So nothing wrong with praying. I mean, we can say the prayers that we say, and there's nothing wrong with praying and say the regular prayers that we say. And I have certain ones that are favorite prayers. But there's nothing wrong with talking to them. Just talk to them. Let them know what you're feeling. Let them know what's on your mind. Ask him what his will is for you. And he'll let you know. Now, don't ask for a strong message, though, okay? He'll let you know through circumstances and all that kind of stuff. And through people. Through sponsors and all that kind of stuff. We get into the area of meditation. And I'm going to kind of combine prayer and meditation here to talk to you about. There's different ways to meditate. Boy, talk about Freudian slips. It says that when you're starting off, there's nothing wrong with starting off with something that you can use. I like the 24-hour-a-day book. All right. My sponsor had me read because I was always projecting. You know, I was always kind of figuring out how things are going to be. And you know, making these plans and exactly how it should work out and all this kind of stuff. My sponsor had to bat me back in today, and he had me start reading that Sanskrit proverb, look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the realities and verities of existence, the bliss of growth, the splendor of action, the glory of power. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is but a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. And you know that you can meditate about something like that, about a thought that means something to you, and that living one day at a time and trying to live today well. You know, and the amazing thing is, I never did that before. I was always worried about what happened yesterday and what was going to catch up to me and what the consequences were going to be tomorrow. And today would pass me right on by. It's just like, whoosh, what happened today, you know, and another day would be wasted. And what I started to read that thing on a daily basis, and he says, you read this every morning. He says, and one day I'll ask you to recite it for me. You know, so first thing I tried to do was to sit down and try to memorize it. That's not what he meant. He never did ask me. But he wanted me to make it meaningful. He wanted me to learn to live in a present one day at a time. And you know, when I do what's in front of me to do today, I think that's what God's will is for me. You know, I don't go asking God, you know, what should I buy, a Ford or a Chevy? Okay, it's not real complicated. It probably his will for me is to stay sober today. Well, what do I have to do that? Then it's probably his will for me to do the things that I need to do to stay sober. It's probably for his will for me to love my family. Maybe it's his will for me, probably is his will for me to treat others with respect and love, okay, and not to harm people. Okay. Those are pretty simple things, and the opportunities present themselves over and over and over again each day for me to try to do his will in those areas. It's not terribly complicated. Some other things that you can do to start off with meditating, if you have a difficulty with, is select a prayer. And I love certain prayers in the big book. There's the third step prayer. There's the seven step prayer. Well, I really like that one, you know, because I keep getting batted back into the seven step prayer. There might be a reading or two from Scripture that I like. One of the most beautiful prayers I think I've ever heard is a prayer of St. Francis. And it's in the 12 and 12. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me show love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Darkness, light. Sadness, joy. Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in dying that we are born to eternal life. And when you say these things slowly or read them slowly and you think about what they mean and you think about who said it, the Lord's Prayer is another one. So that's one thing that you can start off with meditation. Another type of meditation is to think about certain truths, certain facts in your life possibly. Okay? I'm gonna say something to you that I think is my own personal truth. It's my own personal opinion, but I really do believe it to be true. I believe that there's a reason that I'm here. I don't know what it is. I'm kind of looking at the reverse side of the tapestry, okay? And maybe someday I'll see the other side of the tapestry and it all makes sense to me. But I am absolutely convinced that there's a reason that I'm here. That's one thing I'm convinced of. The other thing I'm absolutely convinced of is that there is a reason that you are here. Each one of you have a purpose. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I don't know what it is. In all likelihood, probably you don't know what it is. But the adventure of recovery and the adventure of the 11th step is discovering that purpose as it becomes unfolded to us. There's a wonderful book. Sometimes I use some readings that are outside of the conference-approved literature. And there was a book that my wife gave me because she thought I would enjoy it. It was called Embraced by the Light. Okay? And I just absolutely love it. And it was at a time in my life when my father had just had a serious heart attack and we didn't know if he was going to live or not. That's one of the reasons I'm going to take off for the May 4th to see him while he's down here, because I don't know how long he's going to be around. He's had a couple of heart attacks and they've been fairly serious. And I read that book, and it really hit me, because my father has been a tremendous influence on my life. And he's been a tremendous influence on my brothers' lives also, and my sisters. And there's a reason that he's here. And I think what'll happen is, as long as that reason, as long as that purpose exists, I'll be here. I'll not be finished until that purpose is done, until I've accomplished that purpose or had the opportunity to do it and either did it or didn't do it. And I think as long as I'm doing the 11th step and seeking what that purpose is, that's a way that I end up living happy. Okay? That is, I used to think happiness was something that you go out and get. You know, it's what it actually is. It's a byproduct of the way you live. And I think the more that we align ourselves to the purpose that God has for us, the happier our lives are. And I'll tell you what, I can't believe how my life is different today than it was 13 short years ago and a couple of months. I mean, it's totally different. At 38 years old, I thought my life was over. At 38 years old, I thought, this is it, you know. I mean, that's a painful way to do it. I was committing suicide on the installment plan. Okay? One drink at a time. And I think I was literally trying to drink myself to death because I couldn't stand me anymore. And I didn't like my life and I didn't like me. Well, you know, that's totally changed today. That's an absolute miracle. It's an absolute miracle. There's so many miracles that you can just think about. And that's what meditation is. It's just thinking about these things and letting your mind go and letting it come into you. You know, the greatest, think about this. I don't know how you are, but in my case, and probably in your case, the greatest liability of my whole life, the one thing that caused more pain and more trouble than anything else and hurt more people than anything else was my act of alcoholism. And you know what that is today, that experience? Sometimes it's the only thing I can give somebody else that might touch them, that might make a difference in their life, is sharing that experience. I mean, what a miracle when you stop to think about it, that your greatest liability of your whole life can someday possibly become your greatest asset. The one thing that you can give somebody else possibly that nobody else can give them, that'll make a difference. I mean, there's all kinds of miracles in this life. Some of the reasons that I'm convinced I'm here, I think I mentioned about the robbery. You know, last week I was robbed on Halloween night. And the man that robbed me, there was two men. One of them had the gun. I don't know if the other guy had a gun or not. I didn't pay too much attention to him. I was staring down the barrel of his gun. He was very angry. He took me beside this store, you know, in the little alleyway beside a 7-Eleven where it was nice and dark. And he was very angry because I only had 12 bucks on me. I guess he thought I was going into New York Diamond Exchange instead of Little Champ. And he repeatedly threatened to kill me unless I cough it all up. And at one point in time, he had me face the wall, and I thought he was just going to have me face the wall so they could run. And when I faced the wall, I could feel the cold steel of the gun against the back of my head, and I heard him cock the pistol. And in that split second, the thought crossed my mind that this is it, you know. And I was ready to swing around, because I thought if I'm going to go, I may as well try to defend it off, to swing around, try and grab the pistol. Just at the instant that I was going to do that, and I have no idea where this car came from, some car lights flashed into the alley. I don't know if somebody just pulled up and turned off their lights or somebody turning around, okay? But the guy backed off. As soon as the lights kind of flashed into the alley, the guy backed off. So I didn't know where the gun was, so I couldn't reach around and try to grab it. And I guess it scared him because he and the other fella took off, all right? To this day, I don't know why I wasn't killed that night, except that I'm convinced I have a purpose, okay? I have a purpose. And the other thing is, my sponsor said, well, what are you supposed to learn from this? What are you supposed to learn from this? At this time in my life, my ego was getting in charge again. I was working as a program director at a mental health facility in another county. But I was driving 3.5 hours a day to get up there and get back. And I'm trying to think, what am I supposed to learn from that? And I talked to my sponsor and I talked to my spiritual advisor. And my spiritual advisor is the one who told me, he says, Jerry, what I'd like you to do is what happened is, the day that happened was Halloween. I was supposed to go home and go trick-or-treating with my two younger kids. I never made it home. I mean, they had me by the side of that store, and then I called the police, and I was there for a long time. I had to call my wife. I had not seen my kids in 2 days. I was up and left the house before they got up in the morning, and I was getting home after they went to bed at night. I had not seen my kids in 2 days. And the thought that hit me when I thought I was going to die was, you're not even going to get a chance to say goodbye. That was the first thought that hit me. And the second thought that hit me was, what are they going to do? You know, how are they going to go on? Well, what happened was, my spiritual advisor said, Jerry, what I want you to do is I want you to quit debating this, trying to find what the reason is, and just go and turn off the committee, turn off all that stuff that goes on. You know what I mean by the committee? You ever wake up in the morning and your head's kind of sitting up here on a bedpost, you know, and your brain's up there and it says, we've been waiting for you. You know, and it starts off right off the bat. Okay. So anyway, he says, turn off the committee. Don't say anything to God. Just listen. Go someplace quiet and just listen. Well, I knew what he was talking about. I knew he was talking about meditation. But my mind was so going on, I couldn't turn off the committee. I was a basket case for 2 weeks after this thing happened. And I went, after he talked to me, the spiritual advisor was a Catholic priest who understood the program. He's my spiritual advisor. I kept thinking, well, where's a quiet place I could go? The only quiet place I could think of was the graveyard behind the church there. So I went into the graveyard, and it was a moonlit night. And I'm trying to just listen. And the committee isn't cooperating. I mean, my mind is just going a mile a minute. I can't turn the thing off. And I thought, you know, I got to spend an hour alone with God and just listen. And I've already wasted 15 minutes. What am I going to do? So to get my mind off the committee, I started reading the gravestones. I mean, and that's what I started doing. I thought, well, I got to concentrate on something else to get my mind off this, all this. And you know what I started reading? Guess what was printed on the gravestones? Nowhere in there did it have so-and-so was a great salesman or a wonderful counselor. Nowhere in it did it have that he was a very successful farmer or a very wealthy businessman. You know what they inscribed on the gravestones? Loving father, caring husband, beloved spouse. What counted wasn't what I was doing, and it wasn't the title that I had, and it wasn't the responsibility I had. What counts is your relationships with other people in this world, and especially with the people closest to you. And because of that, what happened was I ended up resigning that position and taking a job for a lot less pay that I could work here in town and get to see my wife and my kids and spend time with them and go camping with them, you know, and all that kind of thing. You know, there are all kinds of things that happen in this program. It's just another coincidence was the lady in the hospital when my son was having his partial of his kidney removed. And that's the time of my life when I was at probably my lowest, because I believe I was responsible for that accident. I have never seen that lady since. I have never seen her since. And at the time that she saw me there, she had more years of sobriety than I had months. And I haven't seen her before then, and I haven't seen her since then. I have no idea where she came from. But what a coincidence that the only person left in that parents' waiting room the night that I was thinking about drinking again was another alcoholic that could just sit down and talk with me. There ain't no coincidences. Okay? I don't believe there's coincidences. There's some very specific instructions in the big book. It talks about combining meditation with your tenth step at night. When we retire at night, constructively review the day. Were we resentful, dishonest, selfish, or afraid? Okay. Have we wronged someone? Do you need me to make amends? That's part of meditation, thinking about the day. When we get up in the morning, we think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans carefully. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Okay. And my sponsor used to say, when you get up in the morning, Jerry, you know, you put your shoes under the middle of the bed, so you got to get on your knees when you get up and you say, please, God, just for today. You know, just for today. And he's talking about not drinking. And after he got to know me better, he said, just for today, help me not to drink today and not to hurt anyone. Because he knew enough of my story and he knew who I was. And I needed to work on that. And my anger was one of the... And he was talking about hurting, you know, verbally, emotionally, any other way. Because he knew the way I was when I was drinking. So I had to work on that. In the day, we may face a decision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. We ask God for inspiration. We relax and take it easy, and we don't struggle. Okay. We conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. We ask especially for freedom from self-will, and we are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. Careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Throughout the day, we pause when agitated and ask for the right action, saying to ourselves over and over again, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. I can meditate just sitting down here at the beach, just seeing that ocean come in and the sunrise in the morning and the tides exactly at the right time. And I see all that order and all that power and all that beauty and all the moon and the stars and the sun, everything in the right orbits and the tides exactly on time. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm not in charge. It's going to be okay. I'll bet the sun's going to come up tomorrow. And the grass is still going to be green, and the sky's still going to be blue, and the tide's going to come in when it's supposed to. And with that much order and power and beauty, you know, if I turn my will, my life over to him, it's going to be all right. I really can't do too much to screw it up too bad if I turn my will and my life over to him. It also says in here, we of alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the way that we have just outlined. In the, if you want to do some other reading, sometimes there's other books like As Bill Sees It. There's a beautiful thing he says in there. He says, AA has no disciplinarian. Somebody had written to him a letter, and they're talking about, this guy is doing this thing wrong, and don't you think we ought to boot him out of the fellowship? And he wrote back, and he says, AA has no disciplinarians. Then he went on to say, great suffering and great love are our only disciplinarians. And isn't that true? When we do the things that we're supposed to do, we end up sharing in a great deal of love. And when I don't do the things that I'm supposed to do, I'm the one that ends up in a great deal of suffering. I can't tell you how much good this has done for me to talk with you all. I mean, it forces me to review these things, which I probably need to do. You know, as I'm doing the steps, I want to dispel any notion that I've done these steps or do these steps anywhere near perfection. Sometimes what I talk about is the ideal, and the real is I might not do them consistently, or consistently well, or consistently, period. Okay, and when I don't, you know, HB has a way of kind of getting a 2x4 and getting my attention. Sometimes he has somebody ask me to do the steps, which is probably the best thing in the world for me because it gets me right back into it. So I really am truly grateful to you all for asking me to do this. I think you are a wonderful bunch of people. I have loved coming out here. You all have made me feel welcome every time. And it's been a real joy. I'm rather kind of sad this is my last night, but I do want to see my father. He's only going to be in town for one night. Like I say, those relationships are important. And there's a reason for it. Daryl is one of the guys who helped me out because he was in the program before I was. And he's probably a lot more experienced in the 12 step than I am. And so I'm sure there's a reason that he's going to be talking about the 12 step. And I'm sure that what you're going to hear is what you need to hear next week. Okay? And if I said it, it might not have come out the way it was supposed to. So there ain't no coincidences, there ain't no accidents. And I love you all, and ain't a damn thing you can do about it. Thank you.